Good afternoon, merry listeners. I shall warn anybody at this moment that if they think you're listening to this boo, they'll be very bored. I'm literally just checking out whether long boos of the 30-minute variety can actually be produced on an iPhone. And, well, so this is me planning to do it. I'm standing in the audio brew offices, and the curious noises that you can hear in the background are my accomplice in this, which is the BBC World Service. And I'm going to leave you to listen to it for a while as a bit of background noise, simply because I suspect that noise or not noise will affect the compression size of the file. So, where are we? 48 seconds in. I think I shall just leave the phone for a while. I'm calling this piece Background Noise, bit of Tower Bridge Road, bit of people stomping in and out of the office. You might hear people have a game of table football a bit later. All the excitements of the audio brew office.
So I'm going to just do the most simple way of playing it first, and I'm just going to strike it and you'll hear it ring. A bell ring for so long.
Still going.
So some people say they're just used to eat out of, which they may have been, but they're definitely made for their sonic quality. It can go on, some of them can go on for 2 minutes, apparently. That's the very simple way of striking it, just to say people can recognise that sound. You can also make a continuous sound with a bowl by using either a piece of wood or a piece of suede on a wooden beater. And then what you're doing is you're just pressing in on the rim, the edge of the singing bowl, and then that actually makes the sound happen.
What you're doing then is you're rubbing the beat around the outside, yeah. A bit like you've got a mixing bowl with you and you've got it all wrong and you've got the spoon on the outside.
That's right, it doesn't work on the inside, I've tried. So what you're doing is you're pushing in, and then that allows the bowl, once the beater has gone past the bowl, it wants to expand out. And so that creates the vibration, pushing in and out. And that gives you a continuous sound. And then I just let it go, and it rings beautifully. I just quicken that. You could get all the bells of London to be bowed with an amazing sound.
Discovery was presented by Trevor Cox. The producer was Erica Wright. Next now, time for the latest world news.
BBC.
Animals, arts,
RB music,
football.
Wikipedia is only 10 years old.
Wikipedia is something different. It's a social experiment.
The BBC explores the birth, evolution and future of one of the world's most popular websites.
We're facing a new decade of Wikipedia, and it is a good time to be thinking about where we're headed.
Wikipedia at 10, online from Friday at bbcworldservice.com.
Every Wednesday, Heart and Soul explores the role of faith, spirituality and religion in our everyday lives. And if you miss an episode, you can download it as a weekly podcast at bbcworldservice.com.
This is the BBC in Beijing.
Kampala.
Reykjavik.
Delhi.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
BBC World Service at 16 hours GMT. Welcome to World Briefing. I'm Janet Barry in London.
And I'm Renu Agarwal in Delhi, where it's 9:30 in the evening. Coming up, nearly 200,000 are forced from their homes in Sri Lanka as flood waters rise.
So there are 130,000 living in the camps. The rest are sort of surviving in other public buildings or with relatives.
Severe flooding too in Australia. We get the latest from Brisbane. Also in the programme, the Tunisian president sends troops onto the streets of the capital after days of violent protest.
This situation is based on the economic situation of employment.
People have voiced their concern about this, and the government has heard.
And Turkey restricts the sale of alcohol. We hear from Istanbul.
This is the BBC in London. First, a bulletin of world news.
BBC News with David Legg. Reports from Tunisia say clashes between protesters and security forces are continuing despite a series of measures announced by President Ben Ali to try to end months of protests over unemployment and low living standards. Here's John Lyon.
The latest reports out of Tunisia indicate that the violent clashes between police and protesters have now arrived in the centre of the capital. Witnesses reported that police fired tear gas at hundreds of protesters at a site close to the French embassy. One exiled opposition activist said that demonstrations were also now continuing in numerous towns and cities. He said that in the coastal city of Sfax, up to 30,000 people gathered before they were dispersed by the police. Big protests are also continuing in Kazrin, the heart of the unrest.
The government of Lebanon has collapsed after 11 ministers from Hezbollah and allied groups resigned from the Unity administration. The move followed a dispute among political factions over an international investigation into the murder of the former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. Tension had been high over the past few weeks amid indications that Hezbollah members could be indicted by the United Nations Tribunal looking into Mr. Hariri's death in 2005. The government fell as Mr. Hariri's son, the current Prime Minister Saad Hariri, was meeting President Obama at the White House. In the worst floods for decades, large parts of Australia's third city, Brisbane, are now completely deserted, with thousands of people fleeing the rising waters. Up to 20,000 homes are expected to be submerged by the time the floods peak on Thursday. Rob Minchell, who works for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, has taken refuge on the roof of his house.
I am in a very typical Brisbane suburb, and I am looking at a scene of utter devastation. I can only see rooftop, I can see the tops of trees, I can see a car floating by, I can see sofas floating by, bicycles, fridges just sail past. I'm on the top of my own roof, I've got a mattress, I've got a radio, I've got a telephone, I've got a torch, and I've got a camping stove. And there's about one other person left in the street. Just like something from a science fiction film, to be honest.
Sri Lanka is continuing its battle with the floods that have affected about a million people in the east and centre of the country. A Sri Lankan minister says refugee camps around the eastern town of Batticaloa are growing by the hour, and there's now an urgent need for milk and infant food, mosquito nets, towels and sheets. Safe drinking water is in short supply in some areas. Germany's announced its strongest economic growth figures since its reunification more than 20 years ago. Last year, the economy grew at a pace of 3.6%. The economy minister said his country was performing better than any other European Union member state. Economists attribute the rapid recovery to a surge in exports and strong demand at home for industrial machinery. World News from the BBC. Russia's official report into the crash that killed the Polish president Lech Kaczynski last April says the pilots were put under psychological pressure to land. Investigators said there was a feeling that Mr. Kaczynski would react badly to being told the plane had to divert. From Moscow, here's Steve Rosenberg.
According to the investigation by the Interstate Aviation Committee, it was the crew's decision not to redirect to a reserve airfield, despite poor visibility, that laid the foundations for the disaster. It also claims that the pilots were under psychological pressure from high-ranking passengers on board to land the plane at the original destination, Smolensk Severny Airport, and that the commander of the Polish Air Force had been in the cockpit at the time of the crash.
Portugal has sold more than $1.5 billion worth of bonds as part of a plan to avoid a financial bailout. The auction attracted high demand, but the interest rates the Portuguese government must pay on the bonds are also high. Correspondents say the government will be relieved at the sale as it tries to resist pressure for a bailout. Chinese demolition workers have torn down the Shanghai studio of the artist Ai Weiwei, a move he said was linked to his political activism. Officials said he'd failed to follow planning procedures. The artist said the authorities simply wanted to get rid of his studio.
They wanted to demolish it overnight without us finding out, because they were worried that the demolition might attract more attention or reaction. We did ask why it had been demolished earlier than when we were told, and they just answered that Sooner or later, it would be done anyway.
A French chateau near Paris, which was home to the notorious Central African leader Jean Bedel Bokassa, has been sold at auction. It was bought by an individual buyer for nearly $1.2 million. BBC News.
You're listening to World Briefing from the BBC with Renu Agal in Delhi and Janet Barry in London.
The situation for tens of thousands of people in Sri Lanka affected by severe flooding is becoming increasingly desperate. Officials say nearly 200,000 have been forced from their homes by recent monsoon rain. The nation's food supply is also under threat. Nearly a fifth of Sri Lanka's rice paddies are either destroyed or underwater. The head of delegation for the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in Sri Lanka, Bob McCarrow, told the BBC that many people are living in camps and others are surviving however they can.
Many of them are sitting on their roofs and others are living with relatives, public buildings, places of worship. So there are about 130,000 living in the camps. The rest are sort of surviving in other public buildings or with relatives.
18 people are confirmed dead. For those in makeshift camps, there are reports of flood, food and aid shortages. Joining me now from Colombo is our correspondent Charles Haviland. Charles, how grim is the situation?
Well, I think it is fairly grim. I mean, I was talking to one person just near the worst affected large town, that's Batticaloa. He just said it's unbelievable, it's crazy, he's never seen anything like this in his life. Now, where he was, there is enough to eat and drink, etc. But there are, I think, some quite beleaguered people who have set up their own camps in a town further south called Kalmunai. And people there are saying that they haven't seen any sign of government aid at all. They say there's no food, no water, no medical facilities, no mats to sleep on, etc. It's just a tale of woe for many people. The context is that really a lot of towns and villages have been completely cut off, and 200,000 people have fled their homes, but about 1 million people have been affected in the sense that they are perhaps marooned, perhaps having to get their supplies in by boat and things like that. So it's really very difficult.
And for those living in camps, their troubles must have increased manifold?
Well, what I just heard from a government minister who is from Batticaloa and is there, he says he'll be there for the duration until the situation eases. He just told me this evening that about 25 of the 200 makeshift camps set up in the district have now themselves been flooded, which to my mind is not that surprising because these coastal areas are low-lying, they are lagoon areas, and there is no high ground, as far as I'm aware, in Batticaloa town, so it's not really that surprising that these camps set up in things like schools, mosques, places of worship, other public places, are suffering. So the armed forces apparently have been in action there, helping people to get out. I should say, in fact, that the armed forces are playing quite a big role in some parts, and President Mahinda Rajapaksa, who was touring the district of Polonnaruwa, which is a less badly affected but still quite badly flooded district, he has directed the authorities to do everything they can to help people sort of tear up the rule book, if you like. And the government just within the past hour or so has announced a sort of 24/7 plan for the armed forces to get involved in sending in clean water and cooked meals and shelter. But clearly, it's going to be a while before that can reach all the affected people.
And how unusual is it to have such heavy rains during the season?
I think very unusual. I mean, Sri Lanka does have a complicated climatic pattern, and the north and east of the country are experiencing, would ordinarily be experiencing monsoon at this time of year. But in fact, the north isn't so badly hit at the moment, whereas the east and center of the country are being battered by these exceptionally heavy rains. And some areas, I think, are recording their highest ever rainfall within the space of 3 or 4 days, and people are just kind of marveling at quite how bad it is, quite how severe it is.
Thank you. That was Charles Haviland in Colombo. Severe flooding has also affected large parts of the Australian state of Queensland. The floodwaters in the state capital, Brisbane, are expected to peak in a couple of hours, and the residents there are preparing for the worst. Anna Bly is the Premier of the state of Queensland.
This is an extraordinary once-in-a-100-year event or more. We are, I think, being protected as much as any dam can protect you, but dams don't stop floods. They protect and make it less serious than it would have been. This is an extraordinary event. The catchment is seeing inflows beyond records, so we do need to take it very seriously.
Our correspondent Nick Bryant is in Brisbane and has sent us this report.
I've come to a place called Rosalie Village, one of the lower-lying suburbs of Brisbane, a very fashionable one at that. Normally, street cafes here are full of people having brunch and lunch at this time of the day, but it's a lagoon, completely inundated with water. And what we've been seeing over the past couple of hours is the whole community, really, going into these shops, these cafes, these hair salons, trying to bring out whatever they can, salvaging things like coffee machines, furniture, hair dryers, boxes of wine, pieces of artwork, things like that. Now they've actually been told to get out of the water because somebody noticed the light was on, which means the electricity's on here as well. These have just become very hazardous waters to be in.
They just told us that the only way business owners will be able to get stuff out is through that dinghy. They're not letting people walk through the water.
Joining me now is Andrew Fraser. He's the state parliamentarian and also the state treasurer. Your community has pulled together today in a very big way.
Well, this is called Rosalie Village and it's lived up to its name. People have wandered down and pitched in overnight and through this morning, forming human Congo lines to get equipment out of these small businesses. Many people around here enjoy this area on a Friday night or in the evening, and they've gone in and pitched in to help out their neighbours and their fellow Australians.
You're not only the local MP, you are the state treasurer. This is going to cost Queensland a fortune, is it not?
Well, it's not just going to be the cost to individual businesses like these, but also to some of our largest industries like mining, like agriculture, which will take a long time to get back to full production. Obviously, there'll be an impact on the state's budget as well with the damage bill here. We're talking billions, not millions. So we'll be calling upon the cost-sharing arrangements with the Australian government in order to help the state of Queensland get back on its feet. It's three-quarter disaster declared, and Germany fits into Queensland about five times, so you can imagine the breadth and the sheer size of the scale of what we're dealing with.
Many of the people who live here are young families, and I'm watching a young mother clutching her newborn child. She's dragging a change table up the hill, trying to get it to higher ground. It's stuffed with nappies and wipes, all the things she's going to need. What a difficult situation, a newborn child and a house that's flooded.
Nick Bryant in Brisbane.
In Tunisia, President Zine Al Abidine Ben Ali has responded to days of violence sparked by poverty and unemployment by putting the army on the streets of the capital, Tunis, and sacking the Minister of the Interior. But in a further attempt to defuse the crisis, the protesters who've been arrested during the trouble are to be released. The government says the unrest has left 23 dead, although human rights campaigners put that figure much higher. The Tunisian ambassador to Britain, Hatem Atala, told the BBC that the concerns of the people were not being ignored.
The decisions that were taken today were taken in the very same spirit that we have already shown throughout this crisis, in the sense that the government is listening to what is happening. This situation is based on the economic situation of employment, which is something that we believe is legitimate, something that we believe must be dealt with. People have voiced their concern about this, and the government has heard.
Well, our correspondent Adam Minot is in Tunis, and he joins us now. And what's the situation there at the moment, Adam?
I'm in the south of the city in a district called Etat Haman, where there has been trouble during the course of the past 48 hours. In the past few minutes, I can see in front of me dozens of riots, hundreds of youths in the distance throwing stones, and there have been volleys of tear gassing to try to keep the crowd back. And it looks, and talking to police here, they say they're trying to prevent the youths from getting into the centre of the town. This district here is about 5 kilometres or so from the centre of the city, and it's an attempt to try to keep these protesters here. I've spoken to a few of the protesters, said, what are you angry about? Why are you out on the street throwing stones at the police? And they say, we're ignored. We've been completely marginalised by society here in Tunisia. The government doesn't care about us. The president isn't interested in us. There's high unemployment, rampant food inflation, and we simply had enough.
So it sounds, Adam, like these measures introduced by President Ben Ali really haven't worked.
Well, I think they won't have filtered through, to be honest, yet to the people here, but talking to officials of the government to try to get a sense of what is going on, and I think there's even some confusion in government circles that I've spoken to about whether this signals a new crackdown. Does the new interior minister mean there's going to be a heavier hand, or is there going to be a lighter hand? This is a situation that Tunisia hasn't experienced before. There was sort of rioting back in the early 1980s, and that was over food and unemployment, but nothing on the scale that's being unleashed at the moment, and I think there's enormous fear and indeed confusion in the government.
Adam Minot in Tunis, thanks for joining us.
There's been another suicide blast in northwest Pakistan, killing at least 11 people and injuring many more. Officials say the attacker drove a car laden with explosives into a police station in Banu district in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. The Taliban said they carried out the attack to avenge U.S. drone strikes in the region. The issue of U.S. drones in Pakistani territory was one addressed by the U.S. Vice President Joe Biden, who's been on a brief visit to Pakistan and spoke to reporters at a news conference in Islamabad.
There are those also who accuse the United States of violating your sovereignty as we support your army and pursue terrorists where they hide. I know well over the past 30 years the proud, proud traditions of the Pakistani military and its capacity to defend and protect Pakistan. But I would respectfully suggest that it is the extremists who violate Pakistan's sovereignty and corrupt its good name.
U.S. Vice President Joe Biden. And still in Pakistan, a court has sentenced a father and son to life imprisonment for blasphemy. The two men were found guilty of tearing down a poster advertising a religious event. As Aleem Maqbool reports from Islamabad, the judgment comes at a time of heightened sensitivity about Pakistan's religious laws.
Muhammad Shafi and his son, Muhammad Aslam, were found to have ripped down a notice about a gathering to mark the Prophet Muhammad's birthday. That, according to the court in the town of Dera Ghazi Khan in Punjab, constituted an act of blasphemy, for which the punishment in Pakistan is usually the death sentence. They've been spared that, but have instead been ordered to spend the rest of their lives in prison. Their lawyer says the pair intends to appeal and that the allegations are false. It's the latest in a series of cases that have led human rights campaigners to call for this country's blasphemy laws to be scrapped. But recent events have shown a sizable section of Pakistani society not only wants to keep the religious laws as they stand, but also supports the use of violence to ensure the government doesn't even debate their status. Last week, one of the country's most well-known politicians, Governor Salman Taseer, was shot dead. He'd been the most prominent supporter of a Christian woman, Asia Bibi, who 2 months ago was sentenced to be hanged for blasphemy. There have been some vigils and demonstrations to condemn the governor's murder, but much larger ones celebrating it and calling for the release of Mr. Taseer's assassin. Some religious and political leaders have implied the governor brought death upon himself by criticizing what they consider an untouchable law.
Aleem Maqbool in Islamabad.
You're listening to the BBC World Service with Janet Barry in London and Renu Agal in Delhi. Still to come on World Briefing, Sarah Palin defends herself in a video message on Facebook. More later in the programme. Now, some news just in within the last hour. The government in Lebanon has collapsed after the resignations of 11 ministers from Hezbollah and allied groups over the UN investigation into the murder of the former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. Well, joining us now from Beirut is our correspondent Natalia Antalava. And Natalia, why exactly have these ministers resigned?
Well, it's a dispute that's been going on for a while and the cabinet has been pretty much paralyzed. What's happening is that it's 6 years on since the murder of Rafik Hariri, Lebanon's former prime minister.
Okay, just pop back to see how things are going. Very exciting next door, tea being served. The last of the Christmas mince pies is sitting in the middle of the plate waiting to see who goes for it. And it's just approaching 24 and a half minutes.
And has
Hezbollah has been nervous. They have tried to get their part of the government, where until about an hour ago, they've been trying to get Assad Hariri, the prime minister, to denounce the tribunal, which he has refused to do. And so this is probably the ultimate instrument of pressure. They have now resigned. All of the Hezbollah government members have now resigned, pretty much toppling Prime Minister Hariri's government. And, of course, it all happened while Assad Hariri was meeting Barack Obama in Washington. So he came out of that meeting as a former prime minister.
So politically, where does this leave Lebanon now, Natalia?
In a deadlock, in a complete deadlock, and there are several scenarios of what could unfold and happen from now on. The worst one being civil unrest, which has, of course, happened in Lebanon many times before, and there is always the possibility of that because sectarian tensions are so high, with the Shia Hezbollah on others on one side and the Sunni Assad Hariri and his supporters on the other. Another possibility is the demonstrations. Another possibility is just a very long process of trying to form a new government, which many analysts that I am talking to here say will be probably pretty much impossible. And once again, Lebanon will probably be looking for outside help to resolve this issue. But certainly many people here are very nervous that this is really bad news and this could play out in the streets.
Natalia Antalava in Beirut, thanks for joining us.
The Russian report on the plane crash that caused the death of the late Polish President Lech Kaczynski and 95 others in April has concluded that the pilots were under undue pressure to ignore the advice from officials on the ground. They've been told they could divert the aircraft and avoid landing at Smolensk because of bad weather. The head of the Russian Interstate Aviation Committee, Tatiana Enodina, said the crew took unnecessary risks.
The presence in the cockpit of high-ranking officials, Poland's Air Force chief and head of protocol, and the reaction expected by the crew captain from the main passenger put psychological pressure on crew members and affected decision-making regarding the continuation of landing under any conditions. And I particularly stress this in unsafe landing conditions, in conditions of unjustified risk.
The findings, however, have not gone down well in Poland, as Adam Easton reports from Warsaw.
Jarosław Kaczynski said laying all the blame for the crash on the pilots was one-sided and based on speculation. 9 months on from the disaster, still wearing a black suit and tie in mourning for his twin and the other victims, Mr. Kaczynski called the Russian report a joke at Poland's expense. He questioned why the report omitted the actions of the control tower, which he said gave crucial altitude warnings too late. The investigation found the pilots were under pressure to land by senior passengers, despite the fact they could not see the runway because of dense fog. If the plane had diverted to a reserve airfield, the delegation would have been hours late for a wartime memorial service for thousands of Polish officers murdered at Katyn under Stalin's orders. Mr. Kaczynski said the report found no direct evidence his brother had influenced the pilot's decision.
Adam Easton in Warsaw.
The former Republican vice presidential candidate in the United States, Sarah Palin, has posted an 8-minute video on her Facebook page in which she attacks those who blamed her political convictions for the shooting in Arizona that gravely wounded the Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. With more on Mrs. Palin's latest remarks, here's our Washington correspondent, Paul Adams.
Sarah Palin expresses sympathy for the victims of Saturday's shooting, calls it a tragedy for the country, and praises the heroism of those who overpowered the gunman. But after several days in which she and others on the right have been accused of helping to create a toxic, polarized political atmosphere in America, she uses her 8-minute video to hit back.
Journalists and...
Oh dear. So DAB's not having a good afternoon. Not quite sure why that started going squeaky and squirky. Anyway, I'm looking at a counter now which is approaching the 30-minute mark, 29:15. I suppose I could have a little fiddle with the radio while I'm here. Not sure why it's sounding like that.
Encourage supporters to target 20 Democrats in vulnerable districts, including Gabrielle Giffords in Arizona. Acts of criminality, she said, did not begin and end with such things. They stand on their own. This extraordinary video, which with its backdrop of American flag and mantelpiece has the feel of a presidential address, marks Ms. Palin's first entry into the storm of debate following the shooting. It's likely to be welcomed by her supporters, who feel they're being unfairly blamed for what happened, but her choice of rhetoric may prove controversial.
Paul Adams in Washington.
10 Tamils who were arrested in raids across Switzerland on Tuesday are to appear in court. The Swiss authorities say the men, who are presumed to be members of the defeated Tamil Tiger rebel movement, the LTTE, are accused of money laundering and membership of a criminal organization. More details from Marianne Lanzettel of our South Asia.
Okay, so this is now 30 and a half minutes, just to provide a little bit of a leeway for any doubters. And I should say people who have a 30-minute limit would probably be cut off at this point. I've got 750 minutes, if I remember rightly, on my account, so it isn't going to cut me off. The object of the exercise is just to make sure that the iPhone can hold such a large boo, and to also check the time that it takes to upload. So there's 31 minutes. I think that's probably good enough for this test. I shall now upload, along with the usual trimmings.